Hello, and welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine. I'll be your host tonight, Kate Poppy. Today we're speaking with guest Armilla Isles about gardening in small spaces, edible and wild weeds, and creating native spaces in your own backyard. Armilla is an instructor of biology and environmental science at Madison College. She worked for the agricultural and life sciences at UW-Madison and has numerous years of experience working on organic farms, university gardens, and her own backyard. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm happy to be here.
Could you start by giving us a little background on how you got interested in environmental science and gardening?
Yeah, I started my college experience intending to go into human life science. And so I took all the like kinesiology type classes, anatomy and physiology. And at my small school, most of the people who were studying biology were going into either nursing or kind of like the allied health fields. And that's where I thought I was going to go to. But because I went to a tiny little school, once you take the biology major, you end up taking things like cell biology, plant biology, ecology, and animal biology, which were not directly human sciences. And while many of my peers kind of looked at those classes as something to check off the box, they're like, I'm not really interested in echinoderms or flatworms. I found the non-human biology really, really fascinating. When I took plant biology and started learning about photosynthesis, it just lit a spark in me. It was so fascinating to me how like the plant world is what keeps everything else in check, all the non-plant life in check. I changed my major from biology to environmental science and then decided to pursue a master's in environmental science because the learning about plants just was so fascinating to me. And I also realized I probably didn't want to work in a hospital.
Were you always interested in gardening, or did that kind of come later after your interest in
biology? I think it kind of came after my interest in biology. I was always an outdoorsy kind of child. My mom tells me that she would just send me outside and I would play by myself for hours. And so I always enjoyed doing the things that little kids like to do, you know, making salads out of the leaves and soup out of mud and sticks. And now we joke that I do that like for real and actually eat it. And one of my interests in gardening came from when I was at college. There was a community supported agriculture farm just 2 miles down the road from my college. And I got connected with them through a friend who we were just going on a bike ride. And he said, hey, can we stop at this farm? I have some friends here. And so we stopped there and talked to the farm owner. And I didn't even know it existed before my friend showed it to me. And then I ended up volunteering there off and on for about 7 years. And that's where the gardening bug bit me.
And what would you recommend for people who want to start gardening in small spaces? And what strategies have you found most successful?
Our yard that we have now is pretty small, and we lived in an apartment for several years. But what I would start with, and this is a little silly, I play the game Animal Crossing, and there's a sloth there, and he's the one who sells the plants. And whenever he sells you plants, he signs off with, you got to do what makes you happy. I think about that a lot with small space gardening, because if you only have a little bit of space, you're not going to be able to do everything. You can't grow 25 pounds of zucchini. You're not going to be able to probably grow a lot of corn or something like that. So do you want to go the native route, or do you want to go for pollinators or encouraging hummingbirds or butterflies? And so you got to do what makes you happy. Maybe some of your plants are going to be native, and maybe some of them aren't going to be native, and that's okay. It's not wrong to have non-native plants. It's not wrong to do what makes you happy. If you're wanting to start a garden that you can eat from, but you don't have much space, I always recommend herbs, because there's a meme on the internet about, like, I spent 4 months and $250 and I'm finally harvesting my first 25-cent tomato. So there's this balance of how much effort do I want to put in and how much am I actually going to yield from this plant. And I think herbs are a great middle ground, because you're not trying to get your daily calories from herbs, but they can really elevate your cooking. Like, there's no comparison for a fresh herb. Dried basil is like, it could be any leaf almost, whereas fresh basil is like, wow, packs such a good punch. So if you have a desire to grow stuff for culinary uses, but not much space, and maybe even not much time, herbs are a great option. Basil is a great one. It grows very easily from seed. So if cost is a factor, seeds are so much cheaper than buying whole plants. And basil seeds germinate very easily and tend to grow pretty well too. So basil is a great option. Sage is not as much a small space plant. It can get pretty big and basically turns into a woody bush. But it's also quite pretty and attracts pollinators and is something that you could incorporate into your food. Mint is great because it's super easy, but grow it in a pot unless you want everything in your yard to be mint because it'll spread like crazy. Lavender, great for teas. You can use it in sweet dishes. Could probably use it in some savory dishes as well. But it's also a very pretty plant and it comes back year after year.
Do you plant your herbs in all pots or do you have raised bed situation? What do you typically do?
I have some in pots and some in a cold frame. So a couple of years ago, I took apart some pallets and I built a cold frame that's probably about 4 by 5 feet. And then I got some windows from the Habitat for Humanity Restore. And so it's not a fancy thing, but it helps extend the growing season because I can start things early and it works like a tiny little greenhouse. So I have some herbs in there. So a couple in there, a couple in pots. I don't think I have any that are in ground. A couple more practical tips on small space gardening. Vertical gardening is a great option if you don't have a ton of space. So maybe if you're in an apartment or you just have a small patio, using pots and stakes is a great way to get height if you don't have horizontal space. My yard, for example, has pretty terrible soil. And so I just built a small garden box. It's probably 2 feet by 2 feet. So I'm not growing food for myself, but I planted some scarlet runner beans and the little 2x2 planter is attached to, or it's at the bottom of, I guess, a post that holds up the porch. And so I have that vertical post and the beans can grow up the post and I just grow a few like colorful annuals at the bottom of it. So it kind of is this combination of, I might get a little food from this. The bright colors of the flowers they do attract a lot of bumblebees. And then the flowers that I have at the bottom are just pretty annuals like yeah. Marigolds and some zinnias. Another idea, succession planting is really helpful. So this is the idea that you might not have the same plant there for the whole season, but you could plant some plants will grow really well very early in the season. And then by even this time of the year, like late May to June, those plants are starting to die out and you can reseed in the same area. So you can kind of use that same space perhaps 3 times in the course of a year instead of just having one plant that's there the whole year.
Do you have examples of your favorite ones to do the succession with?
Yeah, and there's some plants that even, like, there are early season plants, mid-season, and late season plants, but then there are some plants that can thrive in a wide variety of temperatures, and you can just replant the same thing over and over. So one wild example of this is probably one of my favorite plants because it's a native plant, it's edible. People probably don't think it's too pretty, but it's native, it's edible, it's super easy to grow, and it's delicious. And that is lamb's quarter, Chenopodium album, and it grows very easily from seed. It starts growing as soon as it's warm enough for anything to pop out of the ground. So at this point in the year, I have been harvesting it for probably close to a month, and they're getting tall enough that the leaves are getting a little tougher, so I can pull those out and reseed them today, and in a month or so, we'll have another great harvest of lamb's quarter.
What do you do with lamb's quarter? How do you eat it?
It's kind of a spinachy sort of, it can be interchanged with spinach. So you can eat it raw, but the top of the plant gets a little bit powdery, and so if you eat it raw, you might feel a little bit of, not quite grittiness, it's not as aggressive as grittiness, but if you just rinse it and blanch it for 30 to 60 seconds, it's really tasty. And it doesn't have too much of the, like, dandelion leaves. They're edible, but they're pretty bitter. Lamb's quarter has a little bit of that wild bitterness, but it's mild enough that you could eat a quantity of it and still enjoy it by the last bite.
So what do you do to incorporate some native weeds into your own gardening? Do you just take what's in your backyard already, or do you try to find stuff that's not necessarily in your backyard and put it there?
I do a little bit of both. So our yard was not a very loved yard when we moved in. It had been rented a lot and there wasn't much care taken to the garden. So for the past few years, we moved in 3 years ago, a lot of it I've just kind of watched what grows in these spaces. And that helps give me an indicator of what is the soil like? How much sun is there here? Is it an area that gathers water when it rains a lot? And so that's given me some clues to what I could potentially plant there and might thrive there. Because I like gardening, but I'm also a bit of a lazy gardener. I don't want to work too hard to get something to grow in an area where it's just not going to grow. So some of the things that I enjoy visually or eating from my garden are things that have already just been there. And a couple examples of those are violets, another early season plant. The flowers are edible. They make a beautiful tea, and the leaves are also edible. So I do like making a violet leaf salad. I also have two bunnies, and they also love violet leaves. So sometimes we just eat violet leaves together. Another example of things that were already in the yard would be plantain. And that's one that's a little bit more on the herbal medicinal side. You probably wouldn't make a salad out of it because it's a bit heartier of a leaf and it has some fibers in it. So you could munch on those kind of for the fun of it, but you probably wouldn't eat a large quantity of them. As for incorporating things into the yard that weren't already there, one thing that I've tried to do semi-successfully is just meet neighbors. And so sometimes I've walked around the neighborhood, and if you see people with a beautiful yard and you comment on their yard, people love it. Like, you can tell when someone's taken a lot of care in their yard. And if you tell them, hey, I really like your garden, or your garden looks great today, they're going to light up and you'll probably have this conversation with them. And about 50% of the time, they'll offer you some plants. So there's one neighbor just a block away, and she converted the strip between the sidewalk and the road into like a, it's some natives and some just flowers that she really likes. And I did just this thing. I walked over and I said, your garden looks great. And she said, I'm about to pull up some plants. Do you want them? And so she had a couple different species of milkweeds, including butterfly weed, which has beautiful bright orange flowers and attracts a bunch of different kinds of pollinators. And so she gave me a couple of those because I wanted to start my own prairie strip between the sidewalk and the road.
That's a great tip. And plus, if you like their garden, I'm sure you have similar tastes in which plants you like too. Yeah. Do you use raised beds for the majority of your yard besides the 2x2 square you mentioned? Are you just letting natives grow in your yard, or are you having restricted spaces of where they can grow?
A little bit of both. I have tried some more traditional vegetable gardening, like peppers and tomatoes and eggplants and those kinds of things, but I tend to have not as much luck with those. So I've done a bit of leafy greens, I've tried some asparagus, I have some raspberries. So a few of the things, the bigger things are growing in just the soil that's there. So I have some raspberry bushes that are just growing straight in the ground. The asparagus is in kind of a raised bed. It didn't look very raised when we arrived there. Like, there was a border there, but the soil wasn't great. So taking the droppings, the manure from our two rabbits, I put a lot of that in the asparagus bed and some hay and some shredded newspaper. I don't think I actually put any garden soil or topsoil in there. And then I planted the asparagus in there. Going back, I think I would have added a bit more soil because I noticed that the water doesn't hold very well in the asparagus bed. The other thing I should have done with the asparagus bed is weeded it, because there were a bunch of milkweed that grew there and I didn't want to remove them because I was like, oh, I can't rip up the milkweed. And I think they just shaded out the asparagus. So most of them didn't come back. Some of them came back, but several of them didn't make it because they just got shaded out. So that kind of goes back to the idea of figure out what you want. Like, if I wanted the pollinators, I got that. But if I wanted the asparagus, I would have had to sacrifice the milkweeds or tried to transplant them, and they don't transplant very well.
What advice would you give to someone who's maybe interested in gardening, or maybe not gardening necessarily, but creating these native spaces, and they're busy or they just don't want to do it? What can they do that's very low maintenance?
I would say starting really small. When I talked to my neighbor who I got the plants from, I initially was thinking I would take out the whole strip between the sidewalk and the road, but she encouraged me to just start with the width of two sidewalk blocks. Work on that first this year, and then once you've got that going, then expand a little more. So I think starting small is a great option, because sometimes you go to Lowe's or Home Depot or whatever, Jung's gardening store, and everything looks so beautiful and you're like, I want one of everything. And then you end up with plants that you're like, I don't have any space for these things. So starting small, I would also recommend the Prairie Moon Nursery. They have an amazing website that tells you everything you would need to know about growing Midwestern native prairie plants. Like, how big are the plants going to get? How bushy? How tall are they going to be? What color are the blooms? When will the blooms happen? What kind of animals it will attract? So I think starting small, choosing your favorites. And I would also recommend just seeing what grows grows, because pollinators are, they're going around everywhere. Birds are pooping seeds out. And sometimes you might have some things that just grow in your yard, like the milkweed that I mentioned. I didn't plant it, but it just grew. And so, you know, if you can't convert your whole lawn into a prairie area, but there's one milkweed growing in the middle of the lawn and you don't mind just mowing around it, just leave the one milkweed. Having one milkweed is better than zero milkweeds.
I'm a big fan of doing stuff like that. Which brings me to my next question, which is, what do you do with the neighbors who like the tidy grass lawns?
Oh.
Do you have any plant recommendations for people like that?
Yeah, so there are some, and this kind of goes back to the native versus non-native, edible versus non-edible, useful versus not useful, which is a weird distinction anyway. But there are several like non-native plants that do serve kind of a native purpose. And one example of these would be just a dandelion. They're native to Europe. They're widespread here. They're naturalized here, so they're not necessarily outcompeting other plants. And even though they're not native, they bloom very early. And so they form, they're like a good source of early food for pollinators. In that same vein, there are many flowers that are beautiful, not necessarily native flowers, but they do provide habitat and food for native species. So a couple examples of these beautiful plants that also can benefit pollinators and also you could eat. Borage has a beautiful purple flower, and you're not like going to cut down on your grocery bill from planting borage. Like, it's just pretty, and it's a little more of like a connection to nature, something you can eat. It's not going to provide lots of calories, but it's beautiful and it provides habitat for creatures. Another example is nasturtium, which has beautiful, very vibrant orange flowers, orange, yellow, reddish flowers. You can eat the leaves and the flowers of nasturtium. Again, you wouldn't eat like a whole salad full of nasturtium, but they have a nice peppery flavor that is good in salads. The scarlet runner bean is another one that I really love. It makes these, the beans are probably 8 inches long. They're pretty big beans and they're delicious raw. They're delicious cooked, but the flowers are just amazing. They almost look tropical to me. Yeah, they have that classic, that bean look to them. Bright red, and almost every time I walk by that porch plant with the scarlet runner bean, they're always big fuzzy bumblebees with their butts sticking out of the flowers, and it makes me so happy. And I think even a neighbor who likes tidy grass could appreciate a beautiful vine like that. Another example, this is a little more like summer or fall, is pepper plants. So all pepper plants are edible peppers. So there's a booth at the farmer's market and they sell ornamental peppers. And I stopped by and I asked, are these ornamental peppers edible? And they said, yeah, you can eat all of them. So these peppers, they grow a lot of tiny little peppers, but the plant is bred for beauty. And it is a very beautiful, pretty small, shrubby plant, but you can also eat the peppers. And so that's another thing where it's an ornamental, but it also, you could use it for food if you want to. One more example. All the alliums, anything in the garlic onion family, those are all edible. This is slightly on the foraging tangent, but they also have a strong smell. So it's easy to identify what an allium is. Like, you smell a garlicky, oniony thing, it's a garlicky, oniony thing. And there are several ornamental varieties that are non-native, but there are also ornamental, well, considered ornamental varieties of alliums that are native, and they're all edible. So, and they also tend to grow pretty easily. So they check off a lot of boxes too, because they're hardy. They grow in really cold weather. So early in the spring, you'll see, sometimes even in the winter, you see chives growing. They grow all through the year, through the fall, edible. And the flowers bloom kind of early. And so those do attract pollinators as well. So any of the alliums, I'm a big fan of those.
And they're really cool looking.
Yeah. Beautiful purple, usually purple or white or somewhere in that purpley white range of flowers. They can sometimes have really like big showy flower heads, and so they, everyone's got to love an allium, right?
And I imagine for the most part you just let things be wild, which is great, but do you ever try to cut things down or try to like move things over if things are getting a little bit too crazy? Maybe dandelions, for example. What do you do in those situations?
Yes, so there are certain plants that I do try to keep out of the garden, even though they're just growing there. One example is burdock, which is, it gets really, really big and the leaves are huge, and I think they're kind of pretty. It's technically edible, but it shades out everything else. And as the name suggests, it makes those horrible burrs that get stuck in every single, they even stick to skin, which is crazy. And so burdock is one thing that I am on a vendetta against. So this spring I went out and I just stuck a spade probably a couple inches under the dirt and just severed the taproot. So that's one that I'm trying to get rid of completely. Another example is Japanese knotweed, which I think is on the NR40 list of plants in Wisconsin that you are not supposed to have because they're highly invasive. Knotweed is edible, and it has kind of like a rhubarb-y taste to it, and so sometimes people make desserts out of it instead of using rhubarb. The roots of Japanese knotweed also are really high in resveratrol. So the compound that they say, like, red wine is good for you because it has resveratrol, that compound is even, it's even higher amounts in the roots of Japanese knotweed. However, because it's super invasive, I don't really want that in my yard. So that one I'm just trying to kill. The milkweeds that killed my asparagus, I might try to transplant some of them this year. I've heard that they're really hard to transplant because the roots do a lot of lateral spreading. So I'm going to try transplanting some of them. We'll see if that works, but maybe it won't work. I think those are the main ones. Oh, Creeping Charlie. My yard is covered in Creeping Charlie, and I just don't know what to do with it. So that's one that I have not even started to think about trying to eradicate or move.
What is the difference between native and non-native and naturalized weeds?
Okay.
And how would knowing that be helpful for people when they're thinking about doing a wild prairie type lawn?
Yeah. So native is, like, I guess the textbook definition of native is plants that have been here since European colonization. That's what we consider as a native plant. Non-native plants would be anything else. So you can have a naturalized non-native, like the dandelion, where it's not from here, it's from Europe, but it is a good neighbor in the sense that it's not trying to take everything over. The naturalized plants are ones that have come to our ecosystem and have assimilated themselves well enough that they're not too weedy. It is also possible to have aggressive native plants. And one example of this is goldenrod. So goldenrod, certain species of goldenrod are native, but they can easily overtake prairie areas. So they are, invasive doesn't necessarily mean bad. Like, there's not like a moral attachment to this. And native doesn't necessarily mean it's not going to outcompete everything else. So if you're starting a prairie planting, one thing that I would recommend is starting with more forbs than you think you want or need. So there's the grasses and the forbs, and prairies are also known as grasslands. And so they are dominated. They have a lot of different kinds of grasses, but the forbs are typically in a more urban setting. You want a nice mix of both. If you say you have a prairie yard and it's just tall grasses, the neighbors might not be super happy. And the forbs are important too. The difficulty sometimes is, though, that grasses grow really almost too well sometimes, especially in the early seasons of starting a prairie. The grasses will typically take off before the forbs will. And so sometimes you can get a heavy concentration of grasses that are well established, and then it might be difficult to establish the flowering plants after that. You could even stagger some of your planting or just plant a greater proportion of forbs than grasses because the grasses will grow very vigorously and spread.
And for people who don't know, forbs are the flowering plants.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I don't know where the word comes from, why they call them forbs, but.
And what about people with shady backyards? What would you recommend for people like that, or maybe trying to create a woodland environment?
Oh, woodland environments are, I think, my favorite. There's a category of plants called spring ephemerals. These are plants that bloom very early, so probably even as early as April, or, you know, around there. So the flowers, these spring ephemerals, the flowers come out really early, and that's kind of their time to shine, because as woodland plants, in a couple months, all the forest trees are going to leaf out, and then there's going to be shade. And so these ephemerals have like a short period of time in which they have the opportunity to gather sunlight. And so they all bloom around the same time. So some of these are edible, some not, but if you're going for the native direction, some spring ephemerals that I think are really beautiful are wild ginger. They do have a funky little three-petaled flower. It's kind of a deep maroon. It's really pretty, and it transplants pretty well. If you know a neighbor who has some, they probably would be willing to dig some up and give it to you because it spreads pretty well. Ramps are another early season plant. So ramps, I think they're also called wild garlic or wild leeks. And they have amazing culinary uses. It's not as fully aggressive, as sharp as garlic, so it's a little sweeter than garlic. So it really does have kind of a leek flavor. And the leaves of those are edible, but if you plant them in your yard, be very cautious or conservative with harvesting, because those leaves are what the plant uses to gather sunlight, to store energy in the bulb, so that they can come back the next year. So you usually only want to harvest one leaf per plant for use. A couple other really beautiful spring ephemerals are bluebells. They grow in lots of leaf litter in wooded areas, Trout lilies are another beautiful one. Yellow trout lilies, white trout lilies. Yeah, I think those are a few of my favorite. There's also one called shooting star, and it looks like a little shooting star. The flowers range from like white to kind of light pink to almost magenta. And they're another woodland species. So if you're planning to plant woodland species, a lot of them have seeds that need to be stratified. And so they need to go through a season of cold and damp. And so if you're planning to plant these seeds, I would say fall is like a good time to start thinking about that. And often you might buy the seeds and then stratify them in the refrigerator over the winter. Or you can put them in milk jugs with soil in them, and they just sit out over the winter, and then they're just subjected to the natural fluctuations of winter, I guess. Or you could plant them directly in the ground. I tried winter sowing this year for the first time, so I got milk jugs, cut them in half, and put a mix of sand and soil in there, and I think it was in January that I planted the seeds, and just left them out in the backyard, and then it was such a great delight this spring to start watching the seeds emerge. 6 out of the 7 species that I tried emerged. So that was exciting.
So did you just keep them right in the milk jug?
Right now, they're still in the milk jug, but probably this week I might try to transplant some of them out into the ground, which feels kind of like, I don't know, sending your kid off to kindergarten or something. You're like, right. Are you going to survive?
When you're thinking about the woodland areas, do you do anything to the lawn? Like if it's a grassy, do you keep the leaves from the fall to help insulate, or what? How do you do that?
Yes, absolutely. My woodlandy area that I've tried to convert was shady enough that the grass wasn't growing very well. So it was just kind of scrubby looking. But what I did is just kept all the leaves. And then sometimes if I saw a neighbor had raked up a pile of leaves that was going to be picked up by the city anyway, I would take some of those leaves and just put them on top, because that leaves are such a good moisture barrier. And a lot of these seeds need that dense, thick, moist blanket of leaves. So I just keep adding leaves year after year and hoping that it builds up the soil, because eventually those leaves will break down and turn into like forest soil, which those plants will appreciate.
Is there anything else you want to add? Any advice for gardeners or anything at all?
I guess I would say just try something. You know, don't be too discouraged. Asparagus is a really long game. So I planted my first asparagus 3 years ago, and I planted, I think, 7 plants. And the first year, everything came up, but you can't harvest asparagus the first year because it needs to build up the root base, because asparagus is a perennial that will come back for decades. 50 years is, you know, some people have their grandmother's asparagus patch. So I planted the first year, everything, all 7 plants came up, and I was super excited. And I was like, okay, in a couple years, I'm gonna have so much asparagus. And then the next spring, you know, I'm eagerly watching to see, are they gonna emerge? And I think 4 or 5 of the 7 emerged. And I was like, okay, lost a couple, but that's okay. And then this year, year 3, would have been the first year that I could actually start harvesting asparagus. So April, May, I'm like eagerly waiting to see. I saw the first spear come up. I was so excited. And of the 7 plants that I originally planted, only 1 has come back so far. So I'm still kind of hoping and waiting the other 6 or the other 5, 4 will come up. But I think I just didn't weed them enough. I did buy more asparagus this year because I'm like, okay, this is going to be a long haul. Before I can, like, if I plant them this year, it'll be, what, 2029 before I start harvesting asparagus. But I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to try again. So I'd say try something. Don't get discouraged if it doesn't work the first time. There's so many things that could go wrong. You could have a bad seed, or maybe you forget to water like 1 time and there's a long dry stretch, or you go on vacation, or a chipmunk comes and digs up this thing that you planted. But it's all kind of part of it, so just have fun with it.
You'll learn something.
Yeah, always.
Well, thank you so much for being here and sharing all of your knowledge. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening.
And we have been speaking to Armilla Isles, instructor of environmental science and expert gardener, about small space gardening, edible weeds, native plants, and more. I'm Kate Poppy, and I wish you all the best of luck in your gardens this season. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a great night. Thank you.
delight. On that low down funky rhythm makes you jump and shout. Just got to find this ghetto panic that everyone's singing about. Tuning in the local scene on the radio. The DJ on the radar screen telling him where to go. Well, the funky fever's getting louder. Sounds just like a soul encounter. Cruising for some barbecue right up Central Avenue. He's got a little day.